Welcome in to Behind the Badgers, presented by U.S. Cellular. We are closing in on 1 year of this podcast, and I want to start by just saying thank you to all of our listeners. Thanks for the feedback. Thanks for caring about Badger athletics. I say it all the time that our fans are the lifeblood of Wisconsin athletics. I mean, I really feel that way. It's what separates us. It's what makes our facilities so amazing, and it's a big thing that we recruit to is how amazing our fan base is and the energy around Wisconsin athletics. And so I want to say thank you, because listening to this podcast is a reflection, and the numbers that we get to see of all the people who are listening to this is, we're really grateful for that. If you haven't done so, please rate us, review it if you like the podcast on Apple or wherever you listen, and subscribe, because it helps us get our message to a bigger audience, spread the Badger cheer, but also some of these more important topics that we're starting to dive into now. So I want to also express our gratitude and how inspired, honestly, that we have been from the reactions of our last podcast with Calvin Barrett. He's the former Wisconsin football player and the police officer who's now teaching future police officers, and Mike Jackson, who oversees the diversity and inclusion department. Brian, have you heard from people about that podcast? Because I have, and I've heard a lot of people who are thankful that we've given them a platform.
Yeah, I think the people that I've heard from really appreciated the perspectives that we brought in. You had a former student athlete who now is in administration, and Mike Jackson, who has his own set of experiences. And then in Calvin, someone who has a really unique insight into the police and justice angle of all of these topics that we're talking about. So I was really glad that we were able to give him a platform. I think it was the most important podcast we've done thus far, frankly. And I'm glad people listened and enjoyed it, and hopefully gained something from it. And
if you haven't listened to it, if you haven't listened to it, please do. It was an open and honest discussion about racism and equity, but more than that, how to make positive change for the Black community. And so those are not topics that we typically cover on this podcast. And quite frankly, you know, largely with UW Athletics, there are things in place within the athletic department to support our Black student athletes and our athletes of color, but not necessarily outwardly. We don't have shared that, but that's changing.
Yeah. And our guests today, I mean, that's part of what we talked to them about, is not only helping affect change within our walls, but using the platform that we have with sports to help affect change on a larger scale, whether that's in the community, in the state, nationwide. And that these two guests we have today, in Isaiah Green-May and Madison Cohen, two football players who are much more than football players, they have a huge opportunity with their platform to reach out and affect change. And it's really insightful and interesting to hear their thoughts on those things, and to hear about the plans they have to try to help make that change really happen.
So before we get to them, let's reset a little bit about where we are. I heard on an NPR podcast the other day about how it feels like we're living through like three Hollywood movies running parallel to each other, like how strange 2020 is. You know, you've got this pandemic that could be a movie all in itself of how COVID-19 has crippled and changed our world. And then you've got the political angle of a presidential election that is super polarizing right now. And then you've got this social justice angle of all these protests and demonstrations and riots. And it's almost like you've got these three parallel things, and
is alien invasion next?
Or it's next,
like,
yeah.
Like, what's hanging out there?
I took my family down to State Street last week to see the murals, and kind of, you know, I have a 10-year-old and a 7-year-old, and I think they sort of grasp what's happening in our country right now, and this movement. But it was impactful for them to see some bad words, I'll say that, but some of the beautiful art that has been commissioned by Black artists in our community, and how they've taken an otherwise eyesore of these plywoods of boarded up buildings on State Street and turned them into beautiful works of art and messages that are important. I don't know if you've been down there to see those.
Yeah, I drove by, actually it was yesterday. I was out on the east side and came back to where I live on the west side. So I intentionally drove that way to get a look at it. My daughter's 5, almost 6, and we just went for a drive last Sunday, like just got in the car and drove around town to sort of remember that there is more to the world than our neighborhood, which is pretty much all she's seen for the most part for the last 3 months.
You guys been on pretty strict quarantine over there at the
Mason House? we haven't done anything. You know, I've been doing some landscaping, and that's about as far outside as I've gotten. But
we've gotten a little bit out.
Yeah, I don't know. I just thought it was important to get out and remember there's more to our world than our neighborhood.
We had a youth baseball tournament last weekend, and it felt great to feel normal, you know, and to watch kids play. You know, there are a lot of protocols taken to try to make it as social distance as possible. And there are some amended rules and some dugout and sanitation, you know, protocol in place. But just to see kids be kids again was really encouraging. And
yeah, it was a nice thing when the parks opened up in town. I mean, sure. Frankly, like just for even the kids to be able to play at the park has been huge.
But COVID-19 is still real. There's no doubt. And we're, as a community, as a campus, trying to put things in place to be able to return to campus, to return to football, to return to anything. I went and got coronavirus tests today over at Alliant Energy Center. They've got free testing, and they are encouraging people to get tested as frequently as possible. They want as many tests out there so that they can help contract trace and figure out how prevalent this virus is right now. And for those of you who haven't done it, it's quick. You can drive through. There's also a walk-up lane. It's not the invasive scratch your brain that you may have heard about, like the Q-tip going all the way up to the top of your skull. It's real quick in either nostril. Both my kids did it. Just their eyes watered a little bit. That's it. Maybe they sneezed, but I would encourage people to get tested, even if they're not showing any symptoms or have any reason, just to keep getting tested and so that we can maybe get our arms around this.
Yeah. And I mean, testing was the backbone of the protocol that was put in place for that return that you alluded to, that football and volleyball student athletes were able to come back in a week before they started voluntary workouts. That week was built in to test and then have basically a quarantine period awaiting those results before anything athletic could begin.
Okay, so now we're a couple weeks into that, right? Many of the football student athletes, they didn't all have to, right? It's
voluntary. Mm-hmm.
Football and volleyball student athletes return to campus. So what does that protocol look like? What have we learned so far in these first couple weeks?
Yeah, I mean, from a raw numbers standpoint, there were 117 tests between football and volleyball student athletes, and two of those came back positive. And then from there, then there's some quarantining, you know, through the contact tracing process of, okay, those two positives, who were they in contact with? And there's, you know, quarantining and self-isolation that goes along with that.
That feels like a low number.
Yeah,
that feels like a good thing.
Yeah, I definitely think so. I mean, there was, looking at the world and how things stand, there was virtually no chance that any group of people was going to get together and have no cases of COVID. So the number, I think, was good. And then it's this phased approach that if football and volleyball can continue and it goes well, then you can bring back women's and men's basketball. Then you can bring back women's and men's hockey. Then the other sports can start to come back. And that schedule's sort of being built out now. But positive first steps. And we'll talk to Isaiah and Madison about just what it, even though, like in the football case, I mean, they're groups of 10. They're capped at groups of 10 in the weight room and out on the field for conditioning at once. But even being together sort of is a big step for the guys on the team, that they can be back in Madison together, you know, they can work out together. But then it's that balance of doing all that, but doing it safely and abiding by all of the guidelines outside of the bubble that's been created within the facility that we feel like will keep them very safe. It's, you know, taking these precautions seriously in everything else they do. And from players that I've talked to, we want to play football. We're taking these steps because it's important for us to take it seriously so that we have a shot to play our season in the fall. So,
Let's be clear. It's important for safety like that, but
I mean, that's a, for someone who
we're a is podcast a college, about sports. So let's,
yeah, for someone who's a college football player, for someone who's a college football back. Player, that's a pretty big carrot at the end of the stick, to be able to play. So, I mean, especially when we are not far removed from seeing the winter sport athletes, the spring sport athletes who had those opportunities taken by the pandemic. Okay, let's do everything we can. And knowing that most of it is fully out of our control, let's do everything we can to put ourselves in a position where this can happen in the fall.
And all eyes are going to be on Major League Baseball when now that they've announced that they're going to try and put a 60-game season in place, and the NBA, that they're going to try this bubble in Orlando and try and finish their season to do playoffs. I mean, everybody's watching NASCAR and golf and all these now to see, okay, can it be done? What mistakes can we learn from?
Sure.
How can we do them? You know, how can we do them and get football back?
And there are parallels. There are parallels you can draw, but there's very big differences between the pro sports and what we're trying to do here also, in that campus at large and instruction and classes and living arrangements, all that has to be sorted out, which we got into at a campus level last week.
Yeah. So to that end, Chancellor Blank announced last week that the campus has put in place a smart restart program, that UW-Madison will begin fall classes as scheduled on September 2nd. They're going to offer in-person instruction in many of the courses until Thanksgiving. After Thanksgiving, they'll switch to a virtual format for all the courses and for the final, 9 days of instruction plus final exams. So this decision is based on the likelihood that students leaving and then returning to Madison after Thanksgiving recess, that might increase the risk of COVID-19 infections on campus, and they might bring it back. So a lot of schools are taking that similar. And this smart restart has a plan of a three-part testing plan of free and unlimited on-campus testing, surveillance testing, targeted testing, and contract tracing. And then they've also got precautions in place of face coverings at any indoor building on campus and outside when social distancing is not possible. Physical distancing in classrooms and workspaces. We're still at home as UW Athletics employees, and I have no idea when we'll return. Not anytime soon. I miss it. I miss the interaction, but I also understand that there's no reason for us to be back yet. So we're going to podcast from our basement. but also there's the cleansing and hygiene things, and then symptom monitoring amongst students and staff. So they rolled out a pretty extensive plan, but no one knows until we do it.
No, but I think one of my takeaways from listening to that plan is nothing has really changed in terms of what should be expected of us as citizens since this began back in February, March. Like, we need to be doing our part as well. You know, wash your hands, physical distance when possible, wear a mask, all of those things. Like, a lot of this is going to fall on us. You know, we talk about whether we're going to play football in the fall. A good portion of that is going to fall outside of the bubble of how the Wisconsin football team handles this situation. A lot of it's going to fall under we as a community handle this situation.
Yes, people are going to pay attention to how football and volleyball have come back to campus and come back to Madison, and then how the other athletes do, and hopefully later this summer, and then how students at large return to campus. And people will be paying attention to that. And this is our public service announcement. Wear a mask, wash your hands, stay physical distance. Quarantine is still a thing, or social distancing is still a thing.
Just because we're bored with it doesn't mean the virus has gone away. I mean, that's just not the case.
So I want to get Isaiah and Madison's opinion on that too, of what it's like kind of returning to campus. We can returning to our community here, because one's from North Carolina and one's from Illinois. And so they came back from different areas. And let's get to their perspective on that in just a sec. Right now, staying in touch is more important than ever. So to help you stay connected during this unprecedented time, U.S. Cellular's waiving data overage charges. Mason, you know how important that could be with a little kid around. Like, she's probably takes you, if she's anything like my kid, she takes our phones all the time and on YouTube and streaming things. And I don't even know what data limits are anymore, because we've probably blown past any if we had them. So U.S. Cellular is trying to help families like that. Now through July, no matter what plan you're on, you'll have the smartphone data you need and not be charged for overages. So even if you have to be apart, and we still are, we're still social distancing, we can stay in touch with each other thanks to U.S. Cellular.
So to further our discussion from last week on the idea of racial justice and these things that we're seeing all across the country, we wanted to bring on two current student athletes who are very heavily involved in trying to be leaders in affecting change. So we've got Madison Cohn, who is a senior. He's a defensive back, safety, nickel, corner. Played in 31 games. He's seen plenty of experience for the Badgers. But more importantly than that, he is going to be one of the Badgers' representatives on the Big Ten Anti-Hate and Anti-Racism Coalition, along with softball player Tyra Turner, Paul Christ, softball coach Yvette Healy, Barry Alvarez are also going to be on that. Mike Jackson, who was our guest last week, will also be part of the coalition. But Madison, the person, is who we want to talk to today. And the same with Isaiah Green-May, who's a guy that we saw a little bit of at outside linebacker last year, started the opener. He got hurt, and that slowed him down a little bit. But somebody that, you know, we've had Zach Bond on the podcast recently, and who fills his shoes will be a big question mark on the field for this team. Isaiah is definitely one of those guys that's got a shot to fill that role. But more importantly, he's somebody who's passionate on these subjects, somebody who can speak well to what the team is talking about in terms of social justice. And he's going to be coming into this year. He'll be the new president of the group that works within UW Athletics called Student Athletes Equally Supporting Others. So we've got two football players on the podcast today, but we want to talk to them as people. So let's hear from our conversation with Madison Cohn and Isaiah Green-May.
Isaiah, Madison, thank you so much for giving us some time on the podcast here. It's fun to have student athletes back on, like current ones. We've been having alumni and coaches, and so it's good to have some current student athletes back on, and maybe we can talk some football and what life is like right now. Let's start there, though, guys. How long have you guys been – you're back on campus now. How long have you been back on campus? Madison, you go first. When did you get back to town?
I've been back for this is my third week back. So, of course, the way the setup kind of was, we came back the first week, we got tested, and then we kind of just took that first week off to get the results and make sure that everybody was squared away and good to go. So that first week was kind of chill. And then so I've actually been working out for 2 weeks. So this is my third week back.
Prior to that, you were back home in North Carolina. What was your setup back there? Were you able to work out much? What was your quarantine like?
My quarantine was actually pretty good. So having siblings made that not a bad deal at all. Of course, it got to the point where we started to get tired of each other a little bit. But I mean, at the end of the day, it was all love. And then with all my siblings being athletes, you know, it wasn't hard at all to get some work in, whether it was in the yard. We would go out to the park. And then all of my other siblings, they play basketball, so we had a little gym that we had access to. It's actually a church gym, so that's how we could get into it. All of the gyms and stuff where we were was closed, but that loophole was kind of like churches were kind of like the exception. So kind of knowing somebody there and getting into that gym, we were able to get in there and do stuff. So yeah, my quarantine, it honestly wasn't bad at all. It was honestly a blessing. With me having two siblings in college, you know, we got to we got an extensive amount of time where we were all back home. And my mom, she was really excited because she didn't think that we would get that quality time again. So it was actually pretty good for us.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, when's the last time you were at home that extended amount of period? You guys usually only get a couple days here and there during the season or during the year. I mean,
really short.
Yeah, yeah. No, yeah, Isaiah, and even with our breaks, yeah. So it wasn't nothing close to what we just got.
keep mama bear happy. Isaiah, what about you? You're from a lot closer. You're from Illinois. So how long were you back home in quarantine? How long you been back in town?
Yeah, so I was at home for about, I'd probably say close to a month. But, you know, we had a lot of traffic in the house, a lot of essential workers in the house. So, you know, there's too much traffic. I decided to come back up north, you know. I've been back for going on 2 months now. So that's been going well. A lot of guys came back as well. So, you know, we've been able to just, you know, work out together, do something just by ourselves. And been back for a while. Enjoying it.
You guys now finally have the chance to be back around each other a little bit here in Madison, but I say a little bit because COVID is out there and the protocols with physical distancing and everything. How different is it to be back, but not? Like what's life like for you guys right now, sort of when you are venturing outside your apartment?
Right, yeah. Whole lot of FaceTime and Zoom calls, you know. When all the guys started coming back, you know, we're used to, you know, handshaking, hugging, how are you, how's the family and everything. But, you know, it's super distant now, not as intimate, you know what I mean? Can't, you know, that physical contact is definitely a part of, you know, that brotherhood we build here. But it's been so much different. But, you know, it's definitely worth it. Definitely just keep your distance and not getting too close to each other. it's just been, it's what we got to do. That's what I would say. You know, it's not normal, but it's what has to happen to keep us all safe.
Yeah, kind of like feeding off Isaiah. Yeah, like he said, you know, it's definitely been different from the aspect of, you know, of what we're naturally used to doing. It's like when you see God, especially when you haven't seen him in a couple months, you know the natural reaction is to give him some dap or something like that. So yeah, that part is a little different. We're still trying to get used to that new normal. But I mean, as far as like being back, you know, on the positive side, you know, it's good to be back around some guys. And even though you can't see everybody because the workouts are limited, you know, it's good to just see a couple faces and, you know, and just work out with a couple of your guys that you're going to be playing with this season. So, so yeah, kind of like I hit on earlier, just kind of finding out what that new normal is and kind of just trying to get used to it as best as possible. But it's been a pretty smooth transition so far.
Tell me more about these virtual meetings. Like, this fascinates me, really. How long have they been going on? Because they were probably long before you guys got back to campus. You guys would have position meetings. And so what's it like? Do you guys talk over each other? Is it just the coach gets to talk? Nobody else gets to say anything? Like, what is it like?
Man, I would say, you know, obviously being the host of these Zoom calls, like, the coach is able to mute everybody. But usually that's not how it goes when – you know, whenever he'll just leave us all unmuted, we'll unmute ourselves to ask a question. Usually coach will go over it all. And then, you know, afterwards, any questions or during, you know, any questions. But just hammering away just as if we were in person, trying to make it as normal as possible, taking notes as usual. You know, coach is seeing if you're attentive or not, you know, calls on everybody, you know, checking if you're tuned in, locked in. And, you know, that can be like a little different, you know, with the outside distractions. Maybe you got like people walking in the back or like mom asking you to go get something, take out the trash, go get the mail or something like that. But I mean, our coaches are doing their best to, you know, install the playbook and just trying to make it, again, as normal as possible.
So you're watching film, like they're sharing their screen and they're showing you cutups?
Yep, definitely. Yes, sir.
Now that Chris Orr is not in the defensive room, like everybody else has a little bit of time to talk. Is that what I, that's kind of what I
asked. Yeah, you know, Chris usually takes up most of the time, man. That guy's a character, man. That guy can talk. But yeah, you know, a little bit more room to talk now.
Who's going to be the vocal guy now? Like who's going to be the guy who, like, oh man, he won't stop talking. But that, yeah, maybe that's a good thing.
Right. Yeah. Time will tell. I mean, you never really know. Those guys usually pop up. You know, they assume that position naturally, you know. Time will tell. We'll see.
Yeah, the biggest part about one of the really cool things about spring ball is it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like the follow-up to, you know, the season you just had. And it's kind of like, you know, the guys who were there who were moving on, you know, with their lives, whether that's professional whether that's playing professional football or going another career route, you know, they go and do their thing. And then it's like the new guys, some new guys come, but then like the new group comes, and in that group, you know, the spring is really when those like new leaders really emerge. So losing that period for a lot of schools, you know, that really hurt in certain aspects. But you know, the fact that they're extending camp a little longer, I think that's going to be really good for teams and just guys emerging into those roles where people transition to other parts of their lives. So you asking who that next leader is going to be, kind of like Zay said, time will tell. And since I've been here, Chris Orr, the way he led last year, it was a pretty unique. When I think back on like freshman year, we won the Orange Bowl, we didn't really have a Chris Orr, somebody who was out there yelling. So that's kind of like, it's not one of those things that you have every year. You know, it's just one of those things. You got to let the team form its own identity. And that's what kind of happens in the spring. You know, guys kind of assume roles and guys kind of lead the best way they know how. But yeah, so will we have somebody out there like a Chris Orr this year? I don't know. But I mean, hey, we're gonna definitely do what we got to do to get the job done.
Mason, I like hearing guys explain, like, politically correct explain Chris Orr. he called him unique. Like, I like to hear the terms. Yeah, unique is one. That's good.
Hey, Chris is definitely one of my favorite guys that I've played with so far in my whole life. He's a joy to line up with. He's gonna bring that energy every day, and it's contagious.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. I don't know if there's gonna be another Chris.
All right, so the leadership on the field in the locker room, at least vocally, is TBD. But Madison, for you, you're clearly in a leadership role on, you know, being selected to be part of the Big Ten anti-racism, anti-hate coalition. What does that mean to you? And how did that process happen? Like, how did you end up as one of the student athlete reps for Wisconsin on that group?
So for sure, yeah. Going like on to your answering your first question, yeah, I mean, I feel honored to be on that role. I don't take it lightly. It's a unique opportunity, a great opportunity to really represent, you know, the university and my other peers, you know, and just really, you know, taking some things to the Big Ten as a whole, and, you know, just trying to, you know, push some things forward and make our experience, you know, the best it can be, you know, on campuses across the whole Big Ten conference. And just me, you know, having that opportunity, you know, the big thing with me is really, you know, I really enjoy the fact that I'm going to be able to, that I'm not going and just representing myself, but I'm representing Isaiah and all my other guys, you know. So when I go, I don't see that, you know, I'm going and I'm doing this. I'm more seeing this like I'm gonna be the face there, but while I'm there, I want to represent everybody. I want everybody's voice to be heard when I go to those meetings and when I talk about the experience that we're having, you know, at our school. So it's definitely an honor. I kind of forgot what the second part of your question was.
No, your answer to the first part, though, I mean, that sounds like leadership. Like, I want to represent something bigger than myself. I want to carry carry this for the whole group. I think that's a great example of leadership and probably insight into why you were selected. But the second part of the question was, how did it come about? How did you get picked to be part of this group?
Oh, so yeah, it was one of those things. I was kind of just back home, you know, enjoying my quarantine, you know, for what it was. And Coach Chris gave me a call, and he informed me that the Big Ten, that they were putting this coalition together. And he asked me if that was something that I would be interested in. So when he ran it by me, he started talking about it, but before he actually asked me if I wanted to do it. And I was on board before he officially asked me if I wanted to do it. So when he was talking about it, I was just like, yeah, you know, it sounds like a great opportunity to really get some stuff done. So when he asked me, I was like, yeah. So I kind of talked to him, and then after that, I kind of saw the Big Ten. They started putting stuff out about it, and then so kind of just went from there. But yeah, Coach Chris was the first person to bring it to me.
What do you? I mean, this is all still very much. I mean, you guys haven't even met yet as a group. What do you want to get out of this group? What do you want? What do you want the coalition what would you like to see the coalition do? I mean, there's an emphasis on voter registration that obviously in an election year is going to be really important. But beyond that, what are some things that you want to see come out of this? And Isaiah, I mean, for you too, what would you like to see Madison take to the table to help this guide this coalition to make some actionable results?
We actually had our first meeting at the beginning of this week, on Monday. But it was a very introductory, but what they told us is, you know, they really wanted our feedback. So it's not just student athletes on there, you know, it's coaches, administrators, but they put a big emphasis on that. You know, they really want to hear from the student athletes, and they want to hear about our experiences and stuff where we feel like that initiative that we can bring to the table that we feel can make the conference better as a whole. So one of the big emphases is the whole border thing that's attached to this, and that was kind of that was really the main part of our first conversation. It was really really surrounding the fact that, like, voting, it doesn't get talked about as much as it should. You know, it's not enough emphasis is placed on voting that it should be. And even when we talk about voting, we focus so much on the president, but that's not the only election that happens. You know what I'm saying? There's other elections that take place that a lot of people are just unaware of. So just really getting those conversations started and just getting it to where, you know, talking about voting and people voting is actually a cool thing, because it's something that kind of gets thrown on the back burner now, but it's extremely important.
Go ahead, Isaiah. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I was about to say he took the words out of my mouth, man. I mean, Coney puts it perfectly.
So Barry Alvarez made a statement, announced last week that November 3rd would be a non-event day for UW Athletics, that we won't be holding practices or competitions. And that falls in line with that. November 3rd is the election day that I would imagine you guys were pleased to see that's a priority and that's an actionable step that UW is taking to take action, I guess. I don't know how else to say it, but were you guys surprised by that, or did you have a reaction when you found that out? Were you just like, no practice that day, all right.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I thought it was expected. Like, okay, like, yes, this should be happening, you know? Okay. I didn't expect anything less.
Hopefully it'll catch on and be a national, almost like a national holiday. There's thought of that, right, too. Like, maybe you make it a holiday that people don't work that day either, to give them the space to vote. Hey, Madison, was Kevin Warren the new commissioner on that call that you had earlier this week?
He was, yep.
I don't know if you've had a chance to meet him before that call or not, but he's really impressive, and he's a very dynamic speaker too. And this anti-race, this anti-hate coalition was one of his initiatives and one of the charges that he wanted to implement before George Floyd died, before any of the civil unrest and the Black Lives Matter movement has really been thrust into the spotlight in the last few weeks. Even before that, this was important to him. Did he talk on that call much?
For sure. Yes. I mean, he was the, when the call started, you know, he was the head guy up front leading. You know, it wasn't one of those things where it's like, all right, like, he's going to put a coalition in place and he's going to delegate a couple people to be over and he's going to stand back. No, he was there. You know, when the call started, he was the first person to introduce, what all we were doing and what kind of he wanted to see it be, you know, moving forward. So yeah, I mean, he was very active in our first call, and that was very surprising to me, because, you know, in some of those instances, you would, in the title, in the position he's in, you would think like, okay, he would put that together, and then like he would just like kind of have somebody else run it or whatever. But the fact that he was actually there, and he's actually, you know, he's spending his time, you know, trying to really make stuff better for us, that was really impressive on his end. And then he was passionate about before the whole George Floyd incident and, you know, other incidents like that. So and that's just kind of like he was aware that, you know, like even before the whole George Floyd thing, you know, it's been an issue in our country, you know, for hundreds and hundreds of years. You know, it's just one of those things that, you know, the only difference with this George Floyd situation is that it's like we caught it on video and America saw it and they didn't turn their back this time. You know, people actually, you know, saw it and they decided to like, okay, like, this is enough. Like, we actually have to take action because this stuff keeps happening over and over and over. So, I mean, even before the whole George Floyd thing, it's something that's been an issue. So, I mean, him coming in and him being passionate before that even happened, that's a huge step. And the George Floyd thing just kind of, it was just kind of, you know, the catalyst of this whole thing. It kind of pushed it forward. And then a lot of other initiatives have kind of been brought forth because of that.
Madison, you made the point that, I mean, we've seen the Ahmaud Arbery and Breonna Taylor and George Floyd. I mean, those are the most recent incidents that have really put this in the spotlight, but these are not new issues. What, Isaiah, I'll throw it to you. What kind of conversations are you guys, as teammates, what kind of conversations are you guys having around these issues?
Yeah, so the biggest thing we've been talking about is just acknowledgement and empathizing, right? I feel like the worst thing that is, you know, even more painful than actually watching it or going through it is just seeing people turn a blind eye to it. I just feel like knowing that the acknowledgement is there and that, you know, the empathy is there, that makes it like slightly better, I guess, you know, just turning the blind eye and acting as if it's not there, or maybe there's something that could be differently done, or it's just one bad apple, like they say. You know, that's not it. And so just acknowledgement, you know, and me being a mixed kid, you know, my mom's white, my father's black, you know, this puts me in like a special position, because like I may have family members that are, you know, on the opposite side of the spectrum, and you know, I can reach out to them personally. I have that, you know, that bloodline to reach out to them personally and try to, you know, help their perspective. And I just feel like that's the biggest thing we've been talking about, just acknowledgement. The first and foremost step is just acknowledgement.
Isaiah, since you brought it up, being a mixed race kid, did your parents have to talk? How were you raised in terms of race? Like, you know, in your house, did they have to talk to you about how to behave in certain standards, but then other places you could behave differently? What were your experiences like that growing up?
Right. I grew up in a suburb of Chicago, Bolingbrook, Illinois, born and raised. I came from that's a very diverse town in itself. My neighborhood was full of Black kids. At a young age, there wasn't many white kids in my neighborhood. And so, like, everybody knew my mom. My mom was the white lady on the block, you know what I mean? Everybody knew her. And so, for her, like, being around a bunch of Black folks, like that's not an awkward situation at all. You know, if anything, she's right at home. And so, for me, like, she sat me down early and was just like, when people see you, they see a Black kid. You're a Black male. You're a young Black man. And so, nobody's going to say, oh, like, he must be mixed with this, and this. Like, no. Like, they're going to see the color of your skin and go off of that. So it was never really, like, where do I fit? I'm confused. Am I, like, shoning away, like, the white side of my family? Like, it was never that. It's just my mom just told me, like, this is what people are going to see and this is how people are going to react. And so I just took it from there and, yeah.
So Madison's on this Big Ten leadership group, but you guys have been active on campus prior to this, haven't you? I mean, there are some committees in place in our own athletic department that the Say-So group, the Minority Student Athlete Union. How long have you guys been involved in that, and why did you decide to get involved in that in the first place? Madison, what about you?
So, yeah, so Say-So is it's one of our committees in this. And it's basically, it's a diversity and inclusion group. Say-So stands for student athletes equally supporting others. So basically, it's just a group for minorities to kind of, we create a safe space and a platform for minorities to just come together, be themselves, and, you know, and really just like talk about our experiences, in a place where we are underrepresented. Every people kind of come in, they bring their own thing. And even like on campus, a lot of people have had a bunch of really unique experiences. For example, I've talked to some people. I've had classmates who have been from Wisconsin who told me that they never saw a Black person until they got to high school. So it's like they had only seen them on TV, you know. So it's just one of those things. And it's like you're just kind of open. You're kind of opened up to like a whole new world, you know, especially like I come from a place that's very diverse, you know, it's like half and half white and Black where I went to school. So coming to a place like this and some people who just like, who never really had exposure to anything really outside of who they are and their family, you know, it's a culture shock for some. For me, coming from a place where I'm used to, you know, interacting with both, you know, for me, it really wasn't a tough transition, but I've had teammates that have come up and they've come from areas that are all Black. So they come to a place like this and it's a big culture shock for them. And they got to figure out, you know, how they're going to navigate and maneuver around the town because it's just a different feel for them. So that's kind of like, it's just different for some people and everybody, you know, they have their own backgrounds, but coming to a place like this, and the space that we create is kind of for you to come and just kind of like talk about your experiences and we can kind of like feed off each other and help each other.
Yeah, absolutely. Say-So is definitely, you know, an intimate space. And I will also add that it's educational. You know, there's no more than 30 or 40 athletes at a time that come there. You know, it's really intimate so that, you know, when we break off into, you know, our break off groups that, you know, people really open up and everyone gets a chance to talk and speak their mind and just express what they do know and what they don't know. And Say-So is a very special thing that we're trying to spread around the Big Ten. I know the University of Wisconsin is the only school in the Big Ten besides Michigan that has anything similar to it. So this is really huge for us.
And Isaiah, you're going to be the president of Say So.
Yes, sir. Yes,
for
sir.
For this year, right? Okay. That's awesome.
A huge step for me. I'm going on my third year now being involved in Say So. And I just can't wait to assume this position and, you know, really get that face-to-face intimate contact. But it's looking like it's going to have to be a little altered this year. But we're still looking to, you know, keep taking it up a notch. Each year has been growing. So we're looking to keep the growth.
You know, Isaiah, you talked about the idea of the first step being sort of awareness and education, and that's something that is an ongoing process. But I heard Madison mention on a previous interview the idea of, you know, people outside of the athletic world valuing who you guys as student athletes are as people, valuing who you are and not what you do necessarily. From your platform that you guys have, that's very visible, you know, do you get a feeling like you're in a position where you can enact and you can help drive change beyond just your peers in Say So? Or do you guys feel like you can take this and be leaders in this space as we all try to grow and turn this idea of racism on its head?
Absolutely. No, for sure. I know that anything we do, our team's going to be right behind us, and with our team comes their family members and their family members, as well as the fan base and the alumni as well. So no matter what we do, if we don't have those outside, you know, that outside support, I know we have that internal, that family support, that brotherhood support, and that team support for sure, no matter what. So I feel like just that alone will bring enough momentum to, you know, start the part of positive change.
If there was one, yeah. If there was one, I know we got to run because you guys are short on time, but if there's one thing that you would want people to know, if there's one thing that you think people could do their part to kind of turn this thing around, what would you say that is? What would you tell the people that are listening to this podcast and hopefully the people that they'll tell it to? What would your message be to how can we as Badgers, and I use that term pretty broadly, whether that's you guys on the team, fans, us that are here on this podcast, whatever, how can we as Badgers make an impact and make things better? If there was one thing you could boil it down to, what would you say that would be?
Madison, you can go ahead.
The biggest thing I would say is this, you know, at the end of the day, you know what I'm saying, we are people just like everybody else. So, you know, it's like, of course, like we're athletes at the university, but you know, like, I mean, we wake up, we go to class, you know what I'm saying? It's like we go to practice, but we got to go to class. We got to do our schoolwork. I know that like a lot of people assume that we're here just to play football, you know, just like me and JT went out to eat one time and one of his classmates was at the restaurant and they had started talking about an assignment. And then so JT actually had a question about the assignment. So he went up and asked his classmate, he was like, what did you decide to like talk about in this? You know, I'm trying to throw some ideas around. And then he was like, what do you mean you're trying to throw some ideas around? Like, you actually have to do it, you know? So like, it's as if like, he said that like him and his friends heard that like, that when we came to practice, like it's like the assignments, they were like already in our lockers and we would just take them and go turn them in. So it's one of those things, like, look, it's like, of course, like we're athletes, but we are students as well. Like the student athlete, you know, like the student applies to us as well. It's like, we have to come in, we have to do our work, you know what I'm saying? On top of our athletic demands, you know, it's like, we got to do all the academic stuff as well. And then, you know, and then even aside from the sports and even the student thing, I feel like it's more of a humanity thing. You know, one of the things I live by is Colossians 3:14. It says above all, clothe yourself in love, which binds us all together in perfect harmony. So basically, like, you know, with all the craziness going on in this world, you know, the key component that we're all missing is genuine love. You know, if everybody genuinely, you know, show love for one another and we just stop looking at race and when we stop looking at all this other stuff that really doesn't mean anything, and we just started treating everybody as humans and imbued everyone with equality and justice, and we just, you know, and we just show genuine love to people, a lot of the problems that we have in this world will go away. So, yeah, so, I mean, for us, the big thing, the one thing I would say is look, don't, I mean, as athletes, some people put us on a pedestal or whatever, and some people just look at us for that. But I mean, at the end of the day, we're people just like you all. You know what I'm saying? It's like we're all human beings. You know, we're all going through life together. We're all trying to figure this thing out. So just treat us as such.
Absolutely. And going off of that, just eliminating the blind eye. You know, maybe you're not a person that's out there on the front lines. Maybe you don't go to the protest. Maybe you don't feel comfortable enough, and that's fine. But acting as if it's not happening, or as if you just change the channel, or just take a different route, or just turn a blind eye to it, that cannot happen. So just, again, acknowledgement and empathize. Picture yourself in those situations. Like, just try as hard as you can to understand that this is not normal. Like, this isn't just a part of society. This isn't just this like, it's different. It's the wrong thing. It's opposite of right. It's terrible.
I saw a guy with a shirt on today that said, "Humankind, be both." And I really like that. Like, be a human and be kind. Like, that's a lot. That's a big part of what this is. Hey, Brian Mason asked you guys, do you think you have a platform to make change? I want to tell you both, the answer is yes, you do. You guys are football players. And because of that, you're role models in our community, but also because you're good people and you're doing steps. You are getting on these committees. You're being involved. You're coming on this podcast. You're speaking up. You're trying to affect change, and you're doing it in a positive way. So we thank you. And I just want to tell you that you guys are empowered. Keep doing it. Keep helping us progress as a community, as a society, as a country, because we know we got a long way to go.
For sure. Yeah. And just kind of going off what you said, it's just like, you know, it's like as athletes, you know, the way that America is set up, you know, whether we want to admit it or not, you know what I'm saying? Like, we're placed to a higher standard. So just knowing that as athletes, that we have a platform and that we can enact change, you know, if we really all get behind something. And that's something that I think, like, when you look over the past couple months, that's something that athletes all across the world are beginning to tap into. You know, athletes are really starting to realize, you know, how much weight that their voices carry, you know, and how much change that they could actually, you know, enact if we actually, you know, stood together and stood behind something. But even with, you know, the people that are stepping out and speaking up now, I still believe that the athletes that we're only scratching the surface. Like, I feel like there's a whole nother level that we can tap into, and there's a greater level of influence that we can have, and that we're just scratching the surface. So kind of like you said before, you know, it's like, as athletes, you know, it's like, whether we want to know it or not, the answer is yes. You know, so we have a platform, and we actually can enact change. And it's one of those things. It's like, the more that athletes, you know, the more that we believe that, and the more that we actually realize how much weight that our voices carry, you know, then we can actually stand together and stand united and really push some great things forward. And that's one thing that I really look forward to, you know, pushing with this whole coalition thing is really helping people understand that, look, like, your voice carries a lot more weight than you understand. So let's use that, and let's get some positive things done from that.
Well, thank you both for using your voices today and every day. Really appreciate you taking the time to join us. And
let's just do keep this up again and talk football next time. All right, what do you say?
Yeah, for sure.
Definitely. Thank you so much for this opportunity. I really appreciate
this. This is important, but hopefully we talk football too. That's important too.
All right, keep up the good work, guys. Thanks.
All right, thank y'all.
You know, we really did plan to talk some football with them. I mean, we wanted to talk the social justice and some of the things that they're doing to help the Black Lives Matter movement and just make social change in our community and our country. But Mason, we really did intend to have some football talk. I guess we're going to have them again.
I told them when we got off, when we were finished recording, I said, I think we got through about a third of our material. So yeah, Definitely going to have a repeat performance there. We had a lot of ground still to cover.
What else is going on right now that's relevant for us? Men's basketball season tickets went on sale, so that's maybe another step towards, hey, I hope we have a season. I sure hope we have a season, because men's basketball team is – they're preseason top 10, like, unanimously across the board. So that's a podcast for another day when we talk about that, of where this season – I mean, I said we're going to talk about another day, but most hyped seasons for men's basketball, it's got to be in the top – 2, 3, 4, doesn't it? I mean, that 2015 team came in.
Yeah.
But beyond that, so that okay, that's another topic for another day. The Big Ten Network has been doing some all-decade teams for basketball this last week. They announced a third team, a second team, and a first team. That's been some kind of fun social chatter and some banter to figure out. You know, whenever lists are made, they're made to be debated and argued. So let's do that here. Wisconsin had two players named to the all-decade team. Ethan Happ was a second-team player, and Frank Kaminsky was a first-team player. In fact, Frank Kaminsky was named the player of the decade. So kudos to Big Frank, like yet another thing for his mantle. Do you have any Badgers that you thought got snubbed, Mason? Because I've kind of got some opinions. Okay.
I absolutely do.
Speak.
There were two snubs. I mean, you say snubs, I'm not sure who you take off to put these people on, but two
you
snubs.
Can name names. Go ahead. Name names.
Two snubs that stuck out to me. Uh-huh. One of them, Melo Trimble.
I thought we were talking about Badger snubs.
We are. I'm getting to that.
Melo Trimble is like public enemy number one around here. That shot he hit in the Kohl Center gives me the shakes.
And maybe that's why I think he's in my head as somebody right. that should be on his okay. team.
Yeah, but he was a great player at Maryland.
More importantly, how is Jordan Taylor not one of the 15 best players of the decade?
Yeah, I wanted to see him on there too.
I wasn't going to name names. I'm going to name one name.
Go for it.
Yep. You know whose name I'm going to name.
Aaron Kraft.
Aaron Kraft. I mean, now I do not – I know Aaron Kraft's rep. I get it. I do not feel that way about him. I've always said if you watch the episode of BTN's show The Journey where they – like we're hanging out at Aaron Kraft's house and making tacos with his buddies. You're like, okay, I can't.
Oh, yeah.
He's whatever. So set that aside. Jordan Taylor on the floor, better player than Aaron Kraft.
Look at him head to head. Remember the game. Remember the comeback win over Ohio State.
Never forget it.
One of the greatest sporting events I've ever been at. Jordan Taylor went nuts. Matt LaPay had his famous call that I think he regrets to this day. Don't wake him up. He's on fire.
We won't tell Matt we brought that up.
I should have looked it up. He had 30 or something on Aaron Kraft that day. And he's a guy on there. I wondered if Sam Decker would have gotten some credit. Just from Sam Decker was never even a first team All Big Ten player, so that's probably why it would have been a stretch to put him on there. But if you want to talk about productivity and what his team did, he was one of the stars of one of the best teams of the decade, if not the best team of the entire decade. So that's another one I think was there. I saw Iowa fans chirping that Luka Garza.
Around
there. I mean, the season he had last year was
fantastic,
pretty spectacular. Yeah. Now, him not having a postseason probably hurts because he was not eligible. You know, there was no chance for him to make a deep run in March, which some of the names on that list were cemented because they went deep in March. I thought Nick Stauskas, a guy from Michigan, was another name that maybe could have appeared on there.
Sure.
He had some big games against the Badgers, so maybe that's part why I have him in my head, but it's fun to look at those lists.
Jordan Taylor, man, I'm saying Jordan, I'm going, I will. He's forever an underappreciated player.
Podcast.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, we should. He is forever an underappreciated player. And this cements that status for me that dude, there's no way you could build a list of the 15 best players in the Big Ten in the last 10 years and not including Jordan Taylor in my mind.
He was not biased. He was a two-time All-American.
Right.
Which that's rare of any player, especially in the Big Ten.
And, you know, we hammered his assist to turnover numbers and back when he was playing and we were pumping up his numbers. And you talked about the performances he had in the game against Ohio State, but he was a guy who did it on both ends too. I mean, Aaron Kraft's a great defensive player. No doubt, but man, if I'm starting a team, give me Jordan Taylor at the point.
Were you surprised to see Tom Izzo as coach of the year? Bo Ryan was certainly in the mix for that. And he was one of the, I don't know if there's finalists, but he was there was some good competition for coach of the year in the decade.
Yeah, I honestly thought it might go to John Beilein, was the one that I thought might get it. But I thought either Beilein, Bo, Tom Izzo, I thought all would have – I would have not had a gripe with any of those three being your coach of the decade. It was – it's interesting to look back now and try to get some perspective, and you just see whether it's coaches or teams. I mean, you talk about that 2015 Wisconsin team being – one of the best teams, if not the best team the Big Ten produced, and seeing these players on that made the all mid-decade team, it was a pretty damn good decade for the Big Ten in men's hoops. I mean, just fantastic.
I'm not sure the second team couldn't beat the first team, or the third team beat the first team, or the all snub team with Jordan Taylor and Luka Garza and Stauskas and Trimble. Like, with those guys together, they might be able to beat. It was great, and tons of postseason success, a lot of Final Fours. You mentioned it before we were recording that there were three coaches that took their team to multiple Final Fours during that decade. And the ACC and Big East fans will remind us that Big Ten hasn't won a national title since 2000.
Oh, you don't say. Haven't heard that in a while.
So, but I heard that they're going to do this with football. The Big Ten Network's going to come up with some all-decade team. I don't know if they're going to do a third team, second team, first team or not.
I don't think so.
That's a lot of names. But
no, I got the feeling it's going to be one team.
But how do you pick one guy at a position?
I think there'll be some flexibility there. It probably like the all Big Ten team where you've got.
Doesn't have to be two guards, two forwards, two in the center.
Right. Or like for all Big Ten for football where you get two running backs. And
all right. So
even, say you get two running backs.
Okay.
Wisconsin has three that belong on that team, on that all decade team. How do you narrow that down?
Melvin, JT, and
Monte Ball, man.
Monte, how do I all forget time, it? NCAA
all time leading scorer when he was done. I mean,
jeez. Yeah. No kidding. Okay. So, all right. What other Badgers do we think will be in the mix or should be considered or will be on this all-decade team as long as we're having this debate? Let's go.
I mean, okay.
You can build a whole offensive line.
No doubt. I mean, you could the whole offensive line could be Badgers. You know,
Redrick, Ramchek, Karimi,
Zeitler,
Evenstein,
Michael Dieter was Big Ten Offensive Lineman of the Year his senior year. I mean, that's – yeah,
Badger.
Build it all with Badger. Yeah, I mean, he was the center. He was the best center in the country last year and started for 3 years. So build your whole line around Badgers and we'll be good. Well, then we will have no gripes. We won't have to have an all-star team for football next week.
Russell Wilson's got to be in there. I mean, we only played one season, but it was a very special season.
He's certainly worthy of consideration. I think linebacker is one where the Badgers could, you know, you could look at Schobert and Chris Borland and TJ Edwards, Watt, who was a runner-up for the Butkus Award. TJ Watt, who had a
great year.
Zach Bond.
Friend of the pod.
Right. I mean, there's plenty of Badgers there.
How many seasons did JJ Watt play in the decade of the 2010s?
Just 10. Just 1 year.
His final year was 2010?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so he's kind of in the Russell category.
But he's JJ Watt.
He is JJ Watt. We've started watching Ultimate Tag as a family. That's been kind of fun. Have you seen it yet?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh.
It's not bad. I like it. My kids love it.
I can say my daughter was into it. She also likes Holy Moly a lot, though. So
the flow, the flow, the one of the like taggers, like his name is The Flow. He's awesome to watch. Okay. We're off track here. All right. So what have you heard? It's coming out next week. Are they going to reveal?
Yeah, sort of like they did with basketball this week. They'll reveal it through the week next week. So. We'll see.
So we'll come back next week and we can break down and we can argue about who the Jordan Taylor of football was that didn't get their name called.
There you go. I like it. We'll bring on somebody from BTN that was on the panel and rip all their decisions.
The other thing that happened – exactly. The other thing that happened recently this last 2 weeks was that the Wisconsin Athletics Hall of Fame welcomed their 2020 class, and it was a huge one, a big class, but some incredible names in there. That deserves some recognition, and I think it would behoove us to have some of those folks on here too to talk
who's
about
your,
them.
Who's your headliner from that class?
Bo Ryan, probably. He was the one that was announced today, Friday. He was the final one, so they kind of left him as a headliner. But Tom Burke was a name that I got a soft spot for Tom Burke. He was an awesome player. Mike Wilkinson is another headliner name. Aaron Gibson's probably the biggest name.
Yeah, literally, he's the biggest. Period.
But let's give credit to everybody else too. You had Richard Bartman, who was a boxing inductee, Jeff Braun from track and field, John Bice from baseball and hockey, Ted Kellner, special services, huge friend of the program, and one of the most, you know, one of our biggest
super
alums.
Generous. Yeah,
Carla McLeod from hockey. Is that how you pronounce it, McLeod? I probably should have looked that up.
I mean, now that the challenge, I think, of filling out this Hall of Fame every year is going to only get harder, because you could easily, there's enough Hall of Fame caliber. You could easily put a football player on every year. you can, there'll be at least one women's hockey player every year. Men's hockey's got a deep class of people that still aren't in the Hall of Fame yet. Track is coming up on a really impressive era of
men's basketball's in the salad days of their program history.
Right. So
one more name that we didn't announce. I don't want to shortchange anyone. Jackie Zoch. Gosh, I'm
good job not shortchanging her there.
Right. Yeah. Jackie. She was a rower and phenomenal rower too. I don't want to make light of it, but she was an Olympian in 1976. So she's certainly deserving of Wisconsin Athletics Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and you talk about another program with a deep pool of Hall of Famers is rowing. I mean, the success of those programs is fantastic.
Congrats to the class of 2020. If you have time, and who doesn't have time right now, go to uwbadgers.com and click on the Hall of Fame page. It's kind of fun to look through the names, and there's little bios, and there's pictures of a lot of what they're doing now, what they look like now, what they're doing now after their playing careers are long over. It's kind of a fun rabbit hole that you can go down and look through some of the recent classes and some of the great names of Badger history. Mason, you got anything else?
I know. I was just saying, I really liked reading the story about Tom Burke and his his preseason goal of saying he was going to have 20 sacks and basically being laughed at and then going out and getting 22. And he has not forgotten it either.
All right. Kudos to Mike Lucas and Andy Baggett for tracking down all those guys and of this class and doing feature stories on all of them. There's kind of fun trips down memory lane for those guys. And it'd be fun to get some of them on this podcast and catch up with trips down memory lane and what they're doing now. So thanks to everybody for listening. Rate us, review us, subscribe, and please wear a mask, wash your hands, and protect yourselves, protect our community.
Thank you for listening to Behind the Badgers. Please subscribe, rate, and review on your preferred podcast platform. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation.